So the first thing I'll say is that today, February 1st, is a Celtic holiday. Technically, the Celtic holiday began last night at sunset. The Celtic calendar, like the Jewish calendar, the days or holidays begin at sunset. And the name of the holiday is Imbolc, which is the feast of the goddess Bridget. And if you imagine the year as a circle, having a light half and a dark half, you could say an archetypally masculine half, an archetypally feminine half. Imbolc is, you might say, the pole of the dark half of the year, the pole of the energy of the sacred feminine. And so there's a very powerful archetypal feminine or yin association with this day. And Bridget herself is considered, with Patrick, they're kind of the spiritual father, mother and father of Ireland. And so I wanted to talk about the power of yin, because the year, they conceived the year in a kind of yin-yang duality. And before I dive into talking about yin, I will be referring in this talk, I will be using the terms archetypal masculine and archetypal feminine, and I just want to provide some clarity on that. Obviously, these are not meant as prescriptive terms. I think the problem with very traditional gender roles is that men were confined to the masculine, women were confined to the feminine. I think the archetypal masculine and the archetypal feminine are deep wells that exist in all of us. And it's very much a matter of, you know, how we choose to draw on those wells, depending on how we want to identify and present in the world. It's actually the beauty of this time that folks can draw on both of those wells as they see fit in some ways. So yin and yang, the power of yin. I will start by sharing this sheet that I created some time ago, a yin-yang sheet. I put it in the chat there. Just giving the basic pairings of yin and yang. You know, yang is heaven, yin is earth, yang is the creative, yin is the receptive. And so there are a number of dualities that you can follow down that list, many of them quite imaginative. One thing I'll presence is, of course, the dominant moral duality that we have in the West, good and evil, doesn't align with yin and yang at all. You might say that quote-unquote good is when yin and yang are in a healthy balance, a healthy flow, and bad is when you have all of one and you're trying to shut out the other, that kind of thing. And another duality that doesn't really fit with yin and yang is strength and weakness. And I think often yin is misunderstood as weakness. Whereas in fact, there's yang strength and yin strength, and they operate very differently. And a very simple way to think about this is to think about the human body. What would be the yang strengths of the human body? What would be the ability to put out a bunch of force or a bunch of energy, so cardiovascular fitness or muscularity or something like that, something very athletic. Those would be yang strengths of the body. What would be yin strengths of the body? Yin strengths of the body are the body's ability to receive. So it'd be things like the health of the digestive system, the health of the immune system, things like that, the health of the lymphatic system, all these sorts of things. And so it's paradoxical. Yang strengths are what look good at the beach. Yin strengths are allow you to live with health and vitality into old age, you know? And so in the great scheme of things, the yin strengths are much, much more powerful than the yang strengths, even though the yang strengths are more eye-catching in the moment. And that is quite emblematic of the difference between yang strength and yin strength. One way to think about yin strength some more is with an odd term they use in the Tao Te Ching, which is the classic work of Taoism. This term is wu-wei, which literally translates as not doing. You know, there are all these phrases in the Tao Te Ching. The sage accomplishes things by wu-wei. He accomplishes things by not doing, you know, and it's very paradoxical phrasing. And what is meant by this, what is understood in the Taoist tradition, is that when I do something, I'm taking very direct action. I'm trying to cause the thing that I want to happen. Whereas wu-wei, or not doing, is something more like creating the conditions so that the thing I want arises on its own. You know, for example, if I wanted a friend of mine to read a book, you know, the very young way would be to say, you need to read this book, you know, this very forceful, persuasive kind of thing. Whereas the yin way to make that recommendation, I might just leave the book on a coffee table when he comes to visit and he starts flipping through it. Or it might be, you know, during an emotionally significant moment in a conversation, I quote something from the book and he says, wow, that's interesting. Tell me more, you know, like that sort of thing. You know, something that creates the conditions where the person themselves will choose to come to what you want. You know, I think all of you know I'm a high school teacher, and really effective teaching is not so much, you know, shoving the knowledge down their throat, but creating the conditions where the kids themselves are curious enough to ask about it and want to learn on their own. You know, I can't claim to be a master at that, but that is the ideal of wu-wei. And it's fascinating because, how can I say, not doing in this Taoist sense actually might take a lot more work than doing, you know? It takes a lot more perseverance, but it's something much more effective. Along these lines, I would say that some of the most powerful not doing that we do in life is the example that we set. You know, we all set an example for each other. You know, how can I say, we're monkeys, you know, we're monkeys, and monkey see, monkey do is so entrained into our nature. The way I walk through the grocery store influences people. The energy I have when I walk through my daily life influences people, and that's true of all of us, you know. And I think the great teachers of humanity have realized this and realized the power of the example. You know, they called Confucius the great exemplary teacher of the ages. It often strikes me as something very sad about Christianity, about the evolution of Christianity over the past 2,000 years. The early Christian communities were absolutely vibrant places, and people were living those ideals. And because of that, Christianity spread like wildfire through the Mediterranean basin. I mean, within 100 years of its founding, there were Christian communities ringing the entire Mediterranean basin. It spread so quickly and so powerfully. And we have stories of how powerful the witness was from those early communities. Well, fast forward 2,000 years, that vibrant energy is no longer with us to a large degree. And, you know, as word-drunk, head-centered Americans, people resort to using words, you know? But the proselytizing in words, not backed up by any energy, that just becomes cloying noise. That's not actually contributing anything to the world anymore, you know? And so it's very sad what happens when, you know, and we're all prone to this, you know, when we want to say something rather than live it out, you know? There's a great quote from Confucius on the quote sheet. He said, the master said, the ancients spoke very little. They were too ashamed when their actions fell short of their words. And that incredibly, how can I say, almost a characteristic sense of Confucian modesty, that I'm actually not going to, I'm going to be very careful not to talk because I don't want my words to outstrip the example I can set with my life. You know, it's a rebuke for all of us in many ways. And so yin is receptivity, yin is surrender, yin is letting go. And paradoxically, we step into so much power by embracing yin, you know? And part of that is just in terms of very practical, almost strategic terms, you know, the less mental energy and emotional energy I'm spending on the things that I can't control, that frees me up to actually have reserves to spend on the things that I can control, you know? So, I mean, in a very practical way, surrender can help us. But it's also, it's more than that. In many ways, the logic of love, the logic of healing, is one of allowing. It's not, you know, healing is not a doing that I do. It's something that I allow to move through me. Even energy healers will say, you know, it's not that they do the healing. They provide a conduit so that the healing energy can move through them. And really, it's the nature of archetypal love that it's also something that it's not something that I own or I contain. It's something that I allow to move through me. And insofar as it moves through me, it can have tremendous effect on the world, you know. And so, ultimately, I would say that how can I say? The greatest yin energy, the greatest surrender in some ways, is what Buddhism talks about in the concept of enlightenment. You know, the very yang, forceful energy of ego dissolving, you know, the word the word nirvana literally means, it comes from the Sanskrit, blowing out. The image is that the ego, the separateness of the ego, is blown out and extinguished the way a candle is. And how to say this? If you're not absolutely horrified by that idea, I don't know that you fully understand it. You know? I mean, if you think for a second how much emotional charge we have around our ego just with the ordinary everyday ups and downs and slights, you know, someone makes a face at us or cuts us off in traffic or, you know, whatever it is, and ego gets all, you know. I think it's very hard to even appreciate all everything emotionally wrapped up in the ego and everything that would be wrapped up in the extinguishing of the ego. But of course, that would be the ultimate expression of the power of yin, losing the separate self to become one with all things. So at this point, I will share the quote sheet. Here's the quote sheet in the chat. And so, not surprisingly, a few quotes from Lao Tzu from the Tao Te Ching. When the gates of heaven open and shut, are you able to rest in deep acceptance? You know, and just this whole idea, when life is throwing its full panoply of ups and downs at you, can you just receive that? You know, rather than, as we usually do, going on the ride, oh, I want the up, I don't want the down, you know, all that stuff. Also from Lao Tzu, bend and you will be whole, curl and you'll be straight, keep empty and you will be filled. And just this very interesting, you know, sometimes yin can look like weakness, but sometimes yin is a very powerful walking away from the conflict rather than engaging in it, you know? And it may look like cowardice or it may look like weakness, but there's actually profound strength in that. And a translation, I love this translation from Witter Bynner, the surest test of a man be sane is if he accepts life whole as it is, without needing by measure or touch to understand the measureless, untouchable source of its images. Incredible translation. And then a parallel quote from the Gospel of John. This is from the Last Supper discourse in the Gospel of John. Jesus said, "Truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls to the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. He who loves his life in this world loses it, but he who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life." And of course, the very conventional Christian reading of that is that, you know, you hate your mortal life, and then when you die, your soul goes to heaven and has some kind of reward there. But really, the way that Christian mystics read it is much more consistent with a Buddhist reading of it, that he who loves his ego will be stuck in the cycle of birth and death. He who loses his ego opens up to the eternity, the eternal life that is present in every moment. You know? And so there's a much more powerful reading of that than what is ordinarily conventionally given. I read the first one from Confucius, and the second one, even more powerful, the master said, "My life has been my prayer." You know, like, wow. You know, what would it mean to say that? My life has been my prayer. Seneca tells us in a very practical way, it is difficult to bring people to goodness with lessons, but it is easy to do by example. Abu Sayyid Abu'l-Khayr, the great Sufi, said, "Take one step away from yourself and behold the path." That one is amazing. The poet and mystic William Blake said, "The most sublime act is to set another before you." Ramana Maharshi said, "Grace is ever present. All that is necessary is that you surrender to it." That one is understated, but really powerful. Morihei Ueshiba, the founder of Aikido, said, "The spirit of self-sacrifice creates trust in the power of love." Henry Miller said, "I know what the greatest cure is, to give up, to relinquish, to surrender, so that our little hearts may beat in unison with the great heart of the world." Aldous Huxley said, "There's only one effectively redemptive sacrifice, the sacrifice of self-will to make room for the knowledge of God." Or we could say to make room for the experience of the sacred. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi said, "The important thing is this, to be able at any moment to sacrifice what we are for what we could become." That one is worth meditating on. That's a powerful one. The Jungian psychologist Marion Woodman said, "Having a body that is like a musical instrument, open enough to be able to resonate, literally resonate with what is coming both from the inside and from the outside, so one is able to surrender to powers greater than oneself. And that idea that there are powers greater than me, both outside of me and inside of me." That's something that's very, very profound and very humbling. Thich Nhat Hanh said, "When we give ourselves the chance to let go of our tensions, the body's natural capacity to heal itself begins to work." And it really has struck me over the years, healing is a natural current that's always there. And really, the work of healing is about getting rid of all the blocks I have just to receiving that natural current, you know. Julia Cameron said, "The creative process is a process of surrender, not control." And it's worth saying that, you know, certainly that's wonderful for people who do artistic work, but all of us are creating our lives, you know. And there is a creative process insofar as we're creating ourselves each and every day. And that shouldn't be underestimated. Eckhart Tolle said, "Surrender to the grief, despair, fear, loneliness, or whatever form the suffering takes. Witness it without labeling it. Embrace it. Then see how the miracle of surrender transmutes deep suffering into deep peace." And what Mr. Tolle has been able to articulate there, that's very much been my experience. Marianne Williamson said, "Something amazing happens when we surrender and just love. We melt into another world, the realm of power already within us. The world changes when we change. The world softens when we soften. The world loves us when we choose to love the world." And it is fascinating that people walk around for years thinking that the world is something objective and it has a certain quality. And when we shift our mental state, everything about our experience of the world changes. Sharon Salzberg just says quite frankly, "No matter how much we want it to be otherwise, the truth is that we are not in control of the unfolding of our experiences." Just such a foundational truth she articulates there. Muji says, "Let be whatever will be. Give up trying to manipulate. This is freedom." Thiun Mare says, "A warrior cuts out all unnecessary acts. In this way, he saves his personal power." And there's something incredibly powerful in that quote. Shannon Alder says, "You don't have to say everything to be a light. Sometimes a fire built on a hill will bring interested people to your campfire." Amy Lee McCree says, "Start a compassion movement in your community by being an example, a living example of kindness." You know, and it's a wonderful question, you know, what message am I spreading by my example, you know? Catherine Pulsifer says, "Rather than try to change others, you can exhibit what you think the change should be in your own life. You set the example. You live, how you live says more than any number of words you could say to a person. You could set about a transformation in people by sharing your experience and living the life you feel is your purpose." And finally, an anonymous quote, "Be careful how you live. You may be the only Bible that some people read." And obviously that was written for a Christian context, but we could easily say, "Be careful how you live. You may be the only Buddhist teaching some people ever encounter," you know? And what if that were true? What if I were the only Buddhist teaching that a human being ever encountered? You know, how well would I serve that human being?